different people can have different definitions of what a severe disease is. Definitely the idea of involving voices from those communities, like the individual with cystic fibrosis, would be an important part of rolling it out.
Welcome to Genotypecast, a new podcast from Gray Genetics. Genetics isn't always black and white. News stories related to genetics often raise more questions than they answer. On Genotypecast, we bring you insight from genetic counselors. I'm your host, Eleanor Griffith, a certified genetic counselor and the founder of Gray Genetics, an independent telehealth genetic counseling and consulting service.
It's a matter of how it's rolled out, not whether at this point.
Katya Orlova obtained her master's in genetic counseling and public health genetics at the University of Pittsburgh and has previously worked as a prenatal genetic counselor. She is currently a human genetics PhD candidate at the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health and the Center for Craniofacial and Dental Genetics at the University of Pittsburgh, where she does research on early childhood caries. She is also a variant scientist at Ariel Precision Medicine. Today, she is here outside of her professional capacities, and the views expressed don't necessarily reflect those of her employers. Katya's interests are in precision medicine, complex disease, and preventive medicine. So, Katya, George Church has a new dating app? or he's working on an idea for something that could work with dating apps? I saw this first on Twitter, which I think you did too, and it seems like, you know, with my Twitter feed at least, I saw it through a geneticist who was, you know, outraged, and this is eugenics, and a lot of people talking in that vein. And your tweet stood out to me as a little more thoughtful. You said, PSA, we already practice eugenics as a society when we select for specific embryos during IVF or have abortions based on certain diseases. The more complicated question is, where do we draw the line? It seems like people are using the term eugenics in different ways. And of course, everybody's reacting to this based on, I think, like, a quick reference he made in a 60 Minutes interview, which I did not see and do not plan to watch. but everyone's full of opinions anyway, so.
Of course. Yeah, so I came across this news story also on Twitter, as one gets all the news nowadays. And I think it just, the way it blew up really reflects the modern news cycle of everyone weighs in. Everyone has an opinion, aside from just the power of social media to amplify people's opinions, including specialist opinions. It's also reflective of the state of journalism. There's a lot of clickbait and kind of more provocative titles that drive some of these reactions. Some of the articles misquoted George Church, or it was a little bit skewed to make it seem more extreme. But overall, I think that more discussion is good, and having a podcast to discuss news stories like this is also good.
Yeah. It seems like initially what I saw being passed around was a link related to 60 Minutes, and then that interview said almost nothing about the dating app. And then since then, I've seen several different articles that provide a little bit more information, and it really does seem like it's still something that's theoretical. I keep saying dating app, but I think it's something that they want to underlie, like a technology that could underlie other dating apps. Is that your impression?
Yeah, it's a little hard to tell, and it sounds like the information about the dating app was coming out and being refined as George Church was being interviewed about it. So he immediately came out with a frequently asked questions list that seemed a little more considered. But overall, it sounds like a lot of the thinking about this is happening in real time, which I guess is a benefit, because he can source all the criticism, and some of it very valid, their approach to it.
Yeah. And when I saw this, I immediately thought of Doria Shurum. Did you have the same thought? The Orthodox, the Orthodox community's system of, for some people, where everybody has their testing done, they don't necessarily know their results, but when you're going to be set up with someone, you call in, and it's like, are we a match or are we not a match based on whether or not your carriers for the same recessive condition. Is that your impression of how Doria Shurum works?
Yeah. So I also thought of it, and I'm sure a lot of other genetic counselors thought of this program that's been around since the 90s. And actually in a lot of traditional societies, they could have family histories of people with various recessive conditions, and that could work kind of like a low-tech version of Doria Shurum. I also read that in Iceland, they have a whole genetic database on every citizen where people can find out if they're dating someone, whether they're actually like first cousins or something. So it's used in other countries, and certain communities in the United States already.
Right. So the idea itself isn't new, but I guess something that's so widely known, like dating apps, to bring it to that is new, a new scale. And the idea that it's, I mean, dating apps aren't social media, but definitely something like social media adjacent when it gets into different privacy issues and just like the scale of a project that's cutting across a lot of different communities.
Definitely. Yeah.
What do you see in this idea that's positive, and what do you see as the real areas of concern?
Yeah, the fact that it's elective and not coerced and is being developed with input from bioethicists, which it sounds like George Church hired full-time to work on this project based on his website. I think that already bodes well for at least giving them the chance to design something that's thoughtful and takes considerations into account and human rights considerations included. The fact that it exists already, it's helped communities in the past, I think is kind of a proof of principle that it can prevent certain serious genetic conditions from happening for certain couples who are interested in preventing those conditions.
And in thinking about what diseases people might want to prevent, Tay-Sachs is an example from the Orthodox Jewish community. And I think that George Church brought up too is something that a lot of people who had experienced Tay-Sachs were really motivated to prevent that and to prevent marriages or avoid marriages between people who were both carriers for Tay-Sachs. But then I've seen in articles like Tay-Sachs and cystic fibrosis mentioned as examples paired together. And something like cystic fibrosis is obviously a really severe condition, but it's not something that leads to death in childhood. People can live long, healthy lives with it. So what do you see as the complications or the potential issues that could come up in choosing which diseases would be part of this?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's something that probably would require a lot of input. But as you mentioned, Tay-Sachs and cystic fibrosis are two very different diseases, and different people can have different definitions of what a severe disease is. Definitely, there's been a lot written on how to choose genetic conditions for preconception screening. What's acceptable to society? What do individuals want? So that's going to be something to definitely work through.
Yeah. And I think in his FAQ, he mentioned the idea that users would be able to select to opt in or out of certain conditions. Or maybe I'm making that up, but just the idea that, you know, for someone with no genetics background going through a dating app and like filling out your profiles and then being like, yes to avoiding Tay-Sachs, maybe to cystic fibrosis. It just seems like maybe when people aren't like necessarily in the best frame of mind to be thinking about what diseases they might hypothetically want to avoid if they were to meet someone with whom they may or may not want to have children.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot to think through. I mean, do people know what any of these conditions mean? And I think it reminds me of his frequently asked questions where he says the service is complementary to genetic counseling, which I'm not sure what that means or if there's any intention to involve anyone explaining what any of the conditions mean or the implications.
I would assume for cost that there would be something that pulls in, like, here's a short description of these conditions. But then it's always a question of, well, who wrote that description and which way does it skew?
Right.
You know, if you have the condition, I doubt that they're going to link to, a YouTube video with someone who has that condition. And then even if they did, like, that would be like one person's experience, and so many conditions are really variable. So it just seems like, you know, having done online dating myself, like quite a bit, it's an exhausting process, and like making your profile and just thinking like, here's another whole like packet of information you need to sort through.
Right. Like, here's an ethical and science research project I need to embark on before deciding on these 120 up to 3,000 conditions.
Right.
So it's definitely not realistic for an individual to do that on their own. If they develop some materials alongside it, it could work better. But of involving voices from those communities, like the individual with cystic fibrosis, would be an important part of rolling it out. And it sounds like it is being rolled out eventually. So it's a matter of how it's rolled out, not whether at this point.
Yeah. And then a related question that I always think about when we talk about carrier testing is, well, what are we considering a pathogenic variant? I mean, that's actually an area that you specifically work in. So I'm interested in your perspective on that too. I feel like a lot of people's impression of genetics is like you either have the mutation or you don't.
Oh, it's black and white.
Yeah, without really understanding all of the work that goes into looking at really like the probability that a particular genetic change is related to disease.
Right. It is not black and white. And as far as screen results, some of the time it's straightforward, like you and your partner have a pathogenic variant in the CFTR gene that can predispose to cystic fibrosis. And therefore, you know, according to this app, you're quote unquote genetically incompatible. But when you're being screened for variants that predispose to certain diseases, there's different types of variants. So for example, CFTR can have a variety of variants from ones that cause more severe disease to ones that only affect a single organ system, for example, pancreatitis, and in combination with variants in cis and in trans that could have different implications. So the cutoff for what kind of variants are reported can be subjective. And so just because someone gets like a negative result doesn't mean they don't necessarily carry some milder variants that could potentially lead to other conditions. In general, there's always, with any genetic testing, there's always a residual to be a carrier for a variant that is either not detectable or not assayed in the genetic testing. So from a technical perspective, it's never really possible to 100% rule out not having certain variants.
So people could definitely be paired using this technology and have a false sense of security, a false sense of reassurance, thinking that they're definitely not carriers for the same condition, and then be surprised because their knowledge is always imperfect.
Yes. The second part to your question is how do they address variants of uncertain significance? Mm-hmm. So genetic testing field, there's a lot of consideration for whether to return variants of uncertain significance, how to explain them, how to make sure that people follow up on them over time to see if they're reclassified. And most are reclassified as benign, but some are not. So in prenatal testing, typically VUSs are not reported. And so it brings up the question of what will happen if over time a VUS is reclassified as potentially pathogenic. People might not realize that they have variants that are under consideration for being pathogenic.
Yeah. This kind of use makes me wonder if that standard right now of not reporting out VUSs would be maintained or maybe changed, because if the idea is like I live in New York City, so you know the dating pool is already too big. So you know it's like he's like, okay, it's like, do you just rule out people who would have pathogenic variants in the same gene or related to the same condition? Or it's like, well, how much is that really going to reduce the data pool, the dating pool, if you also don't match with people who have VUSs, because you never know, you know, because you're not looking at people that already have a relationship, but then, you know, it seems kind of arbitrary, but you know, you're filtering out people for questionable reasons if you have, you know, not.
Absolutely. And certain ancestral, people from certain populations have higher rates of VUSs, so it would probably affect them disproportionately.
Oh yeah, true. Another issue that you'd mentioned thought was really interesting and I had not thought of is that American companies don't necessarily stay within American borders. But what we do here has potential ramifications in other countries.
Absolutely. So that's one of the things that I thought about first. That was my knee-jerk reaction to all the threads on Twitter. In one of the articles, I think it was the MIT Technology Review, that in one of the job ads for this company, Digidate, I don't think we've mentioned the name yet, but in one of that job ads for the company, they were actually saying that their main market would be to offer this service to people in, I think, India and the Gulf countries, where there's a certain...
There's a lot more consanguinity.
There's more consanguinity and there's kind of a cultural desire to marry within your in-group or your caste. And at first I thought that could be obviously, from at least an American perspective, problematic to promote these kinds of racial societal distinctions.
Yeah, a tool that helps to prop up those social norms that may actually be more negative.
Right. So yeah, like keeping people in the lowest caste down, for example. But then at the same time, given the high rates of consanguinity, there's also a huge potential for preventing genetic conditions. And so in the United States, this might not be at the top of the average Americans or citizens' list of concerns for when they're starting out dating. But in a lot of other cultures, if you only desire to date within and marry within your racial or religious group, then, and you, there's sometimes prohibitions on abortions, and IVF is in vitro fertilization with preconception testing isn't available to everybody. Just financially, that there could be a strong argument for having this kind of service available.
Yeah. What are the main like privacy security issues you see with this kind of idea in terms of like the data and whether it's sold and other information that people might be able to extrapolate from this?
I think in the United States, where we have certain data protections, we could always have more. But I think in some countries internationally, the standards are more lax. And then furthermore, there's a lot of more authoritarian governments that may be able to impose more extreme versions of eugenics if they were able to have access to this kind of data. And it's not limited to this app, but the fact that this app kind of traffics in preconception genetic testing just puts it more in the spotlight. So for example, in Saudi Arabia, they have a lot of consanguinity, something like 60% rates. And in the last 3 years, I think they have a new policy that was enacted that actually mandated premarital genetic testing for various conditions, genetic conditions, HIV. And as a result, they said that if you're quote unquote incompatible with other people, that they're not able to obtain a marriage license. So I think the statistic was something like 165,000 breakups occurred in 2015.
Wow.
As a result of this directive. So depending on the interaction between like the availability of this genetic information and the type of government, the type of social norms that exists in a country, there could be much more negative consequences. And this isn't necessarily a negative consequences. I haven't spoken with people from Saudi to see how they see it, but the fact that it's coerced and you're not able to marry as a result of the genetic test results probably wouldn't sit well with the majority of Americans.
Right.
So there's the question of what's going to happen with this data? Will it be sold to other companies for other purposes? I know you and I spoke about a company that sold their data to another company that was then starting to work with the police force.
Yeah, GEDmatch or GEDmatch. I think people say GEDmatch.
GEDmatch. Yeah, so exactly. There's options like that. And we never really know when we're signing up for a genetic testing service what ultimately can happen if the company goes bankrupt, unless there's really strong informed consent and other types of documents that explicitly spell out what's going to happen with your data. So I think one of the challenges going forward is going to be defining what you want to happen with your data and having that be more of a transparent process.
Yeah. And even in the context, I think of like if I were using a data app and I had something like this running in the background and that like a DigiDate is what they're calling it was sold. Like when I log in, they're going to tell me there's new terms and conditions to agree to. I'm going to say, okay, 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 and check my messages.
Right.
So it's like, obviously.
If you can even read it, it's such a tiny font.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's like, obviously I was like clicking on the app to check my messages and I'm not interested in reading like a legal document right now. So.
Right. Yeah. You're trying to date. And then the other part of your question was about like, what can you infer from this data? And I thought that was also a really interesting angle to look at it through, because in the last few years, I remember a few news stories about very like mathematically inclined people who went on websites like OkCupid to scrape the data from other people's profiles and develop some sort of dating algorithm for themselves.
No, that's totally new to me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of people who are into optimizing every aspect of their life, including their dating life.
Uh-huh.
and so I was thinking, given how many people now know coding and have access to you know, just statistical methods, data analysis methods, scraping methods, whether it would be possible to like band together with a group of people who have already been tested for carrier status using other services, and have them all be on the app. And if you are get the data from these separate profiles, can you infer carrier status of other people just by process of elimination?
Right.
From these few people. I think a good thing that George Church wants to prevent the potential social stigma of being a carrier for a condition, but there might be ways of inferring that status regardless.
Right, right. And then just to circle back to your tweet with the idea of eugenics, seems like people are using that in different ways. Would you say that this is eugenics regardless of how it's implemented, or how do you think about what that term means and how it's being used?
Yeah, I think people are using eugenics very liberally. And as genetic counselors, we're pretty familiar with eugenics because it informed how our profession developed and the core ethical principles of non-directiveness. But we're also aware of how it's practiced today in the medical system with preconception genetic testing, prenatal carrier screening, and IVF. So to me, this isn't necessarily eugenics. It is eugenics, but it's not something different from what's already occurring. At the same time, I think the vast majority of the public has a negative association with the word eugenics, very rightfully so. And I think that's a good reaction to have. I wish we had more negative reactions to certain news stories as a society. But overall, I think it's a really positive thing that it's being discussed so widely on social media and in the news. It's just a way to have more people have more information about genetic technologies and how they're going to impact society, and the kinds of questions that we need to be asking and answering.
If you are a certified genetic counselor and would like to come on GenotypeCast to talk about an issue related to genetics in the news, send an email to podcast@greygenetics.com.
The information contained in this podcast does not constitute medical advice and is also not a substitute for genetic counseling. Neither Grey Genetics nor any of its guests makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Evaluation of an individual's personal and family health history is a crucial part of genetic counseling and any recommendations.